I'm not going to comment on that. I'll get fined for the rest of my life if I get commented on that.
Fourth and five, the national championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Vince Young scores.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another College Chats podcast. This pod is our Thanksgiving special, which means that we'll be talking rivalry games with our guest, and we may also be talking about a certain soccer tournament that's happening in the background. But first, if you don't already know, we're the College Chaps. I'm George, and I'm joined by Ollie this week as AC's volleyball season is well underway. Ollie, with some sadness, we find ourselves at the end of the college football regular season. How are you coping, my friend?
It is with sadness. We were saying earlier this week, it's like, where is it all gone? You know, with rivalry week's the end of the regular season, college football playoff final rankings will be next Sunday. And a week on Sunday after the championship games. I'm losing track of what date it is. And it's just all over too soon. But still plenty of football to look forward to. The rivalry Indeed. Games this weekend. Indeed. This weekend is the best on the calendar, let's be honest.
Indeed.
And we've got a great guest to talk about.
It's not the end of the season, far from it. Our guest is very deliberately timed, as it's rivalry week. And if that wasn't enough rivalry for you, we thought I'd bring him on to talk about USA facing up to England. I'm a complete unbiased spectator in this discussion, so I'm looking forward to it. When we saw the draw being made way back when, we contacted our guest to see if he would come on, and we are incredibly thankful that he's taken time out from his Thanksgiving preparations to chat to us. So it's great to welcome back the man you all know from College Game Day as the Bear, Chris Felica. Hi, Chris. Welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. Happy to be on with you. And it's so funny you talk about the rivalry weekend in college football. In the season winding down, it really is. There may not be a lot of games, a high number of games remaining, but we have some all these games seem to matter. And I think if things play out the way the odds makers expect them to play out this week, Championship Saturday, there's going to be a heck of a lot on the line. So there may not be a ton of games left in the regular season, but there certainly are some very dramatic storyline filled games remaining.
Without a doubt. And of all the games that we're going to talk about, for you this morning, for us this afternoon, they're all going to have some sort of impact on how the rest of the season is going to play out. So let's jump into that, Chris. I guess the one that I wanted to kick off maybe doesn't have as much of an impact on college football playoff as perhaps the others, but it's one of the more intriguing ones. And mostly because of what's been happening in Mississippi this week with the Willie Wonty jump ship across to Auburn. And, you know, Lane Kiffin being Lane Kiffin, his love of social media has had a right good old time this week. Without going into that just now, because he has said he's not going to go, that may change in the time that we speak on this call, but Ole Miss seemed to have gone off the boil a little bit in the past month, if you say, and Mississippi State have just continued to be relatively consistent through this year. I mean, the air raid is working well for Mike Leach, and there's no question that that's an offensive system that can work in the SEC. Where do you see this game going? It is one of the more heated rivalry games, probably why we started. Where do you see this one going, Chris?
Yeah, it is a very heated, nasty, bitter rivalry, and you really it's hard to play from a wagering standpoint, because you wonder if Lane does tell his team I'm staying, what type of boost that may give them. I mean, it could go either way. Like you said, it's been back and forth, and Lane has had some fun in social media, but I'm someone close to the situation tells me that he is really torn about this decision. And if he's really torn about it, that kind of leads me to believe that he is going to stay. But if you look on the field, take the emotional stuff and the coaching stuff out of play, like on the field, I really worry about Ole Miss's defense. They got completely gashed last week. Now, granted, it was on the ground by Rocket Sanders and Arkansas, and Miss State is not the type of team that's going to expose you on the ground like that. They're going to use a short passing game to offset that. But I do wonder if that loss to Alabama, having the ball down 10-yard line, opportunity to pull the upset over Bama, potentially go to the SEC championship game, losing that game, does that kind of linger with them the rest of the way? I've kind of had this suspicion that Ole Miss kind of was a little bit overrated, that they weren't as good as their record throughout the course of the year. And I'm wondering if that's kind of beginning to show a little bit right now. I think one thing to keep in mind is the weather. And I don't know how you guys feel. Like, does the weather favor a team that's going to do the short passing, kind of get it out to a receiver in open space, or is it going to favor an offense like Ole Miss, which is more of a run-based offense? I tend to think, like, getting the ball out in space and making the defense make a play, I think it kind of favors Mississippi State a little bit. So if I had to play this game, I think I'd look at taking the Bullies plus the 2.5 here.
And one thing I did want to ask, Chris, we've seen a lot of how, particularly in the SEC, how home field advantage and the home crowd has really played a massive part. Kiffin has had his say, as Saban often does, about the numbers of people that turn up. It will be a sellout at Vaught Hemingway. There's no question about that. But I do wonder about the size of the Ole Miss stadium. Does that become a factor? It certainly would be a factor if it was getting played in Davis Wade, but it's not. So playing in a stadium like that, does the crowd become a factor?
I don't necessarily think it does, to be quite honest with you, because I think there'll be a pretty decent sized number of Mississippi State fans involved there. And I think the design of that stadium and the capacity and the weather, it'll probably be muted just a little bit. So I don't think the home field is a massive edge, certainly in Oxford.
And just to finish up on that, you said this already, but your feeling, your gut feeling here is that Kiffin stays. Which certainly seems to be what he said this week. He's kind of come out and, you know, called out. But the one thing I would say is, there's a lot of sources which suggested that he was moving. So it's a story which has never really gone away, has it?
No, it's not until either he officially publicly comes out with the AD and says, I'm staying or I'm going. And I don't think that's going to happen this week. Is put yourself in the position of Lane and Auburn. You're going to say, I'm going to Auburn the week of the Egg Bowl. And oh, by the way, the week of the Iron Bowl with Auburn and that team, and they're playing for Cadillac Williams. It just like feels like timing would be really in poor taste to make an announcement prior to the Iron Bowl is open. But I have a strong feeling that he's going to stay, and probably it'll wind up being Hugh Freeze who winds up going to Auburn.
One game that A, hasn't got any coaching implications because these are two first-year coaches with their current programs, and a game that is massive for college football playoff and conference ramifications this weekend is USC and Notre Dame, two highly storied programs in college football. A couple of questions about this game for you, Bear. First off, USC found themselves just outside the top four of the college football playoffs this week in sixth place behind LSU, and obviously the remaining top four. Firstly, how legit is this USC team this year?
Offensively, they are very, very good. And the fact that they've been able to overcome injuries to Addison at wide receiver, and then last week Travis Dye being out and be able to replace him, it goes to show you how good of an offensive play caller and schemer Lincoln Riley really is, and how much Caleb Williams really matters to this team and how much he makes them go. So they're going to score points on anyone. Now, defensively, that's a different story. I mean, you're talking about a team that has relied on turnovers all year long. They got four last week against UCLA. They allowed 7 yards of play and over 500 yards and still managed to win the game. So they're like – the thing is, so many of these teams at the top of the college football playoff standings have warts. Like Clemson doesn't look like a top four team. TCU kind of is what a great offense and defense that gives up some plays. So like they're kind of all the same team. But I think it is scary to see what Lincoln Riley is doing right now at USC before he can get another year or recruiting class under his belt and what he potentially could turn them into. That. Do I think USC is a top four team? Probably not. But at the same time, what case is there to be made for saying definitely TCU is better than them, definitely LSU is better than them? They're all kind of the same team, but I think offensively USC is great. Defensively, they do have some problems.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned there the turnovers for the USC defense. I think it has actually been maybe better than people expected, the defense, because you kind of expect a team like USC to be to struggle defensively and to struggle in the trenches as well. And, you know, with guys like Tuli Tuipulotu this season, they've been great in the trenches at times. They have been able to turn the ball over. You mentioned Caleb Williams there. Just a quick one on Caleb. How do you see him as it pertains to the Heisman Trophy? For a lot of people, he's potentially the favourite now over CJ Stroud. How do you view that race for college football's most outstanding player?
Can you tell me who's going to win the Ohio State-Michigan game? So I think whether it's right or wrong, if Ohio State beats Michigan, I think most people will default to CJ Stroud. And look, you can make a great case for either of them because you could say, hey, Ohio State has not had Trevion Williams, Trevion Henderson, Mayan Williams, Jackson Smith and Jigba for it all like on the field at the same time this year. The one constant has been CJ Stroud, and he's made them go. So that makes him deserving of the Heisman Trophy, but he was the preseason favorite. So I think people might just default to that quarterback on the number one or two ranked team in the country, national, Ohio State, all the recognition that they get. But at the same time, I think there also was something to say similarly to Caleb Williams, USC offense that was without Addison for a good part of the year. Now they're without Travis Dye. They've had their own injuries as well on the other injuries on the offensive side of the ball. He's put up great numbers all year. And without him, it's funny. Somebody brought up a great point. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Danny Cannell. It might have been someone else on social media who they basically said, like, and they actually used it for Drake May, which is a poor example now. But, like, take C.J. Stroud off of Ohio State. What is Ohio State's record? They're probably still 11-0. You take Caleb Williams off of USC, they're probably not 10-1 in the middle of the college football playoff race. So if you view the Heisman as kind of like the most valuable player in college football, I certainly can understand why a lot of people would get behind Caleb Williams, because he also has the pressure too of knowing, like, I have to score basically. My defense is so bad that I basically have to score every single possession. And so far he's done that. Whereas with Ohio State, you've got a defense which made a bunch of plays in the fourth quarter of Penn State when they needed to. And the offense has kind of been hit or miss this year. So I'm not going to argue either way. It's kind of like the in Major League Baseball this past year, the great National League Rookie of the Year debate between Spencer Strider and Michael Harris, the second of the Atlanta Braves. Both had unbelievable rookie campaigns, and it was kind of like, what do you prefer? And I wasn't going to say if you vote for Strider or you vote for Harris, you're making the wrong choice. Like, if you vote for Stroud, if you vote for Williams, there really is no choice and no wrong choice in my mind.
Obviously, USC faced a Notre Dame team who started the season with an ability to impact the college football playoff, that ended in the season with the ability to impact the college football playoff, linking Ohio State and USC for bookend of the season. In between, they've been incredibly inconsistent. You know, we saw them lose to Marshall. We've seen them struggle against teams, but we've also seen them turn teams over as well. What do you think the potential is for a Notre Dame over USC upset, if you can call it that, in the Coliseum this weekend?
You're right. Look at Notre Dame's season has been one of the most bizarre. See, you lose to Stanford, which hasn't beaten an FBS team, hadn't beaten an FBS team at that time in like 15 games. You lose to Marshall, you struggle with Cal, and then you go out and you absolutely shut down Clemson. So, look, defensively, they have the ability, I think, to get some pressure on Caleb Williams. Now, they're a little nicked up in the secondary, and that concerns me. So it's really going to be up to their offense to, A, not turn the ball over. Pine cannot make some bad decisions and turn the ball over. And they're really going to have to just keep those long, sustained drives going on the ground. I think UCLA last week was a little surprised at how well SC held up against the run, and maybe they didn't necessarily stick to it as much as they maybe should have. You know Notre Dame is going to stick to the run game, keep pounding away. They'll be happy with maybe get a first down on a drive, extend the clock, and if you have to punt and play a little field position, fine. I don't ultimately know if Notre Dame could score enough to keep up with USC, even if they are able to control the clock. So they do have a chance to win the game, but I think if you look back to what they tried against North Carolina, that will kind of be the game plan. Because they've already faced a team like this with a bad defense and a high-scoring offense. So I think they can probably look at that North Carolina tape and say, this is what we did well, this is what we didn't do well, and kind of mimic that kind of game plan as well. But will they be able to win a higher-scoring game like that again? We'll find out.
And they've got one of the best punters in the nation as well, Notre Dame and John Sartre. So the ability to kind of dominate field position will be a big key factor of that. We touched on Ohio State and Michigan a little bit. You said who's going to win that game. And it is sort of one of those games where it is incredibly difficult to call, but it is going to be incredibly important to the makeup of the final four of a college football playoff. Obviously, Ohio State has the home advantage. Seems that Michigan is still going to have Blake Corum. Hopefully he's going to return. Who wins this game, Bear? Come on, tell us.
I think Ohio State wins, and it's funny because last week at this time, people were asking me, the early look ahead line in this game is Ohio State -7, 7.5. And I was like, right now I would have to take Michigan. But being that we don't know Corum's health, is he fully going to be 100%? Donovan Edwards, by the way, hasn't played either. And if they don't have a 100% Corum and they don't have Donovan Edwards and the weather is bad and they have to rely on the passing game with JJ McCarthy, they can't win if they don't have the running game. If this game falls on the shoulders of McCarthy to try and beat Ohio State through the air in a bad weather game, that's not going to work. They need Corum on the field, or they need Donovan Edwards back on the field to be able to kind of replicate that game plan of last year where they just kept pounding away at the Ohio State defensive front and kind of wearing them down. But I think ultimately, this is a game that the games are never won strictly because of emotion or payback or revenge. But this is a game that Ohio State and Ryan Day has had circled on their calendar ever since walking off that field last year. Like I said, they got to go out and play. You should have Bayon Williams back. The freshman back played well. I don't think you're going to have Jackson Smith and Jigba, but I do think at home, Ohio State will find a way to win this game. Now, do I want to lay 7.5 or 8 points? I'm not necessarily sure, but I do think that Ohio State will get a hard-fought win. And it's certainly going to matter the perception of this game, win or lose, because I think the loser, if they happen to lose a close game, you're going to look at the college football playoff selection committee saying, hey, this was number two versus number three. It was a one-score game. Football judgment-wise, there's still a great chance that the loser of this game could wind up in the college football playoff.
Yeah, it's going to be incredibly interesting to see whether there's a very real and genuine chance we have a Big Ten and SEC shutout of the playoff. Like you say there, if, say, for example, Michigan wins a close game against Ohio State, those two could still be in the top four. LSU wins the SEC championship over Georgia. There's potential that a two-win LSU team is in the playoff with a one-loss Georgia team. It's crazy what the repercussions for that could be. I'm not obsessed with the Heisman, I promise you. But
that's okay.
You mentioned Blake Corum and that Michigan probably can't win. And we saw against Illinois how they really struggled. It was, you know, it was Jake Moody, the kicker, that really did that win that game for them and keep them in this conversation. Blake, we haven't seen a running back winner of the Heisman Trophy since Derrick Henry. Blake Corum, we've just discussed how important he is to Michigan. Should he be the guy that we're saying, look, Ohio State can win without CJ Stroud. USC can't win without Caleb Williams. Michigan can't win without Blake Corum. He's got to be up there in the conversation, right?
I think that's a very fair analogy. And And I think if you look at the way he's played and the importance of him to the team, that's certainly very, very true. I just wonder again, and you just mentioned how no one's won since Derrick Henry. And I think what you see often, too often, is that team voters just default to quarterback on a highly ranked team. And that's not right. I think we've seen in recent years, whether it's been wide receivers or defensive players or running backs that certainly have had a chance to win and maybe should have won. And it's just been a, let's just vote for the quarterback on number one and number two. The one interesting thing about Corum in Michigan is, and you mentioned how Jake Moody wound up winning that game last week. That's the one thing I would really look at this week is how Michigan has really been bogged down in the red zone. If you look at touchdown percentage in Big Ten games in the red zone, they're 10th. In terms of touchdown percentage. Like it didn't come back and haunt them against Michigan State because the Spartans are so bad. It nearly came back and haunted them last week against Illinois. Like they're going to have to score touchdowns in order to win on Saturday. So they need a healthy Corum in there in the red zone to be able to score touchdowns to give them the best chance to win. But I would have no problem if they beat Ohio State and Caleb Williams seems to struggle or USC winds up losing, I'd have no problem voting Blake Corum to win the Heisman. And I don't have a vote, by the way, just a full disclaimer.
me neither.
We got to do something about that. We talk to people.
Chris, it seems when we're talking about rivalry games, it seems incredulous that we're talking about the Iron Bowl maybe taking a back seat in all of this, and it definitely has shrunk into the background after what's happened over the last few weeks. But it's still an intriguing game, as much about the fact that Cadillac Williams seems to have rejuvenated Auburn. He's certainly got them in a very different mindset and a very positive mindset, frankly, after all that program's been through. I guess if you looked at this at the start of the month, start of the year, or even a couple of months ago, it was unthinkable that Auburn could go into Bryant-Denny and win the game. But Alabama have continued to look vulnerable throughout the season, particularly against the run game. But I mean, from a wide receiver perspective, we're seeing that certainly Alabama secondary, they've been very poor this year. Can Auburn go into Bryant-Denny and win this Iron Bowl, do you think?
Yeah, I think you just hit on the something about it. It's been Alabama's secondary, which has been really, really poor. It's so interesting, though, because we've noticed this now on a couple of different teams. This year. Auburn, Georgia Tech being another. Teams that undergo these coaching changes, and the interim coach has just gotten so much out of the team. And you got Georgia Tech winning games. Clearly these players are playing hard for Cadillac Williams. And they're showing much more of a fight than they did under Brian Harsin. So you know at the very least you're going to get a great effort out of Auburn. Now, is Ashford able to throw the ball and expose the weakness of that Alabama secondary? I don't know. But I think defensively they're going to give Alabama problems. I'm still not sold that Bryce Young's arm and shoulder is completely 100%. Their younger receivers have struggled at times. Their offensive line has – this is not the Alabama team that we're used to seeing. They're still very good. But this is not the team like we saw from a couple of years ago when they won the national championship. And the other thing, too, is I wonder – Alabama, as you guys know, they are used to winning SEC titles and national titles and going to the playoff for the BCS title. The fact that they don't have all of that to play for, like, you wonder, like everyone wants to go out and win their rivalry game, but how much are you going to sell out to win for all state U when your ultimate goals are not achievable? So, look, they're not going to go out there and completely lay an egg or, tank the game. I'm not suggesting that, but just wonder if they're going to be as much on edge, as sharp as they normally would be for a game like that. But I think this is probably too many points in this game, and for the fact that Auburn is going to be, I think, much more emotionally invested in this game, and I think their running game and their defense will be able to give Alabama just enough of a fit to potentially keep this game closer than I think people expect.
It'll certainly be interesting. And you make a good point there, because we've heard Bryce Young and Will Anderson say this week that they'll make some sort of announcement on, you know, what they're going to do probably after this game, which suggests to me they've probably already made their mind up. I'm just going to hold back on that. And if they're leaving, then that will have some sort of impact on the way they play the game, and probably in the way the team plays. Just to go back to Cadillac Williams, I've been very lucky to be on a couple of calls where he's been on it, and there's no denying that he gets his passion for the program across loud and clear, and a lot of people have really taken to the way that he's gone about taking over the job in very difficult circumstances. A lot of big names. We started this podcast talking about Lane Kiffin. A lot of big names being attached to that job. You said that earlier on you thought Hugh Freeze would come in, and I think that probably is a very realistic opportunity. Any chance that the Auburn administrators are thinking about leaving Cadillac in that job?
Unfortunately, I don't think so. I shouldn't say unfortunately, because a lot of times, I think back to some coaches, like I remember Carl Torbush at North Carolina, and you know, Bill Stewart in West Virginia, who took over weird situations, and the player, they were the player's choice for the head coach, and it didn't work out. And a lot of times I think if you hire this interim head coach based on a small sample size, it might be a little bit more of an emotional decision. Oh, look at how they rallied. They played great. He can keep this up. And he probably and maybe not necessarily can't. So, like, look, I think what this does do, however, is it creates a very good resume for Cadillac Williams to potentially get another job, or maybe he stays at Auburn as like an associate head coach or something like that, because it's clear the kids have a relationship and respond to him. But I just don't know if the new athletic director there is going to come in and name an assistant from the past regime as head coach. I just think politically and just thinking it out that probably is not going to be the way this thing shakes out.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. Chris, when I introduced you at the outset, I talked about the football, and maybe I should caveat what the word football means in this context, right? But our football, I know you are a passionate follower of soccer, because we've chatted about this before. Mm-hmm. And I just we wanted to touch a little bit on clearly the big game coming up on Friday, but your thoughts on first USA's performance against Wales, which ended up in a draw. Perplexed many Americans, I would imagine. But what's your initial thoughts on the outing so far you've seen from the team?
I think the first 45 minutes were great, and I think they were very unfortunate to only go into the half up 1-0. And then I think what you saw in the second half is Greg Berhalter be a little bit slow to the substitution. I'm trying to think of a witty phrase. So that's why I'm being a little indecisive here. But I think he was a little late in making substitutions, and I think that allowed Wales to get back into the game. And then just a silly challenge by Zimmerman to give Gareth Bale the penalty kick to ultimately even it up. But it's funny, because I think if you ask most people in the U.S. who are dialed into soccer, they would be happy. Like a draw, it was a good result for the U.S. in that game. Now, from where you were up 1-0, controlling the match, you would have hoped for 3 points. But I think you look back and you're like, okay, a point is pretty good here, knowing that you still have the match against England. The goal against England is going to be try for another point. Just don't lose 3-0, 3-1, and put yourself in a position where goal differential is going to come into play, and you're going to have to put a big number on Iran in the final group stage match. But I think they should go into the game against England pretty confident, based on if they can play the way they did in the first half. I was kind of caught off guard at how forward pressing and attacking they were in that first half. But then again, in the second half, they got a little tired. Wales had much of the ball. And in the end, I think draw was probably the fair result.
Yeah, it certainly felt as if all the pressing that they did in the first half had kind of taken its toll a little bit, and they started to fall back a little bit. And I think Wales were tactically made a switch anyway, but were trying to take advantage of that. So going into the England game, we saw what England did to Iran. I'm not sure if that's a fair, and I can say this as a Scotsman, I'm not sure that's a fair reflection of how good England are, because I'm not sure that we think that Iran are any great shakes. Although I do painfully remember Scotland playing Iran in 1978, which did not turn out too favourably for us. So you said that the goal is not to take a heavy beating, and I think that's a fair assessment. But the chances of England, the chances of America actually getting a victory here, Chris, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, they are clearly the underdog, but I don't think they are as big of an underdog as maybe the world may perceive them, or maybe some people in the U.S. may perceive them. Because, you hit on it. I don't think England are in the class of Brazil. I can't even say Argentina, because Argentina went out and lost to Saudi Arabia. And I was talking about this before the tournament with a lot of people, and I kept thinking that we were going to get some weird results in this tournament just because of the timing of it, when it was held in the calendar, the location of it. And that would all lead into the U.S.'s favor here. I mean, I haven't seen any update on Harry Maguire got hurt, I believe it was in the end of the England match, but you hit on it there. Like 6-2 against Iran, I don't think is the true indicator of where England is. Iran did not, their lineup was a little weird for whatever reasons you want to figure it out on your own. And England just started pressing with the youth, and the midfield was terrific. But I think, skill-wise and athletic-wise, I think the U.S. will offer a much stiffer test moving forward. If I had to make a prediction, like 2-1 England sounds about right for me in this match. And look, I'm sure most U.S. fans would prefer a draw or hopefully win. But I think if you 2-1, I think you're okay moving forward into the last game, even though you are a little bit of a risk, but my heart hopes U.S. wins, but head says that England are slightly better than U.S.
I feel as if I have to sit on the fence here, to be honest, but I'll let Ollie go.
You haven't sat on the fence at all. You know, all I heard from that was that you both hope that the USA beat England. Look, I'll be watching Toledo against West Michigan and Arizona State against Arizona instead of that. Chris, Thanksgiving week in America, Thanksgiving Day tomorrow, Black Friday. How does the next couple of days look for you? How do you celebrate Thanksgiving and a fabulous feast of football?
It is, football U.S. style, football European style, and it's funny because my parents are coming up. We're hosting my wife and I. So my parents are coming up. My sister, my brother-in-law, my nephew are coming up. And my nephew is just infatuated, like with English, like lineage, and also, and he actually rooted for Wales against the U.S. So like, it's pretty funny. And I have to go to Columbus on Friday morning for college game day, or else I get to stay here because I know he's going to root for England against the U.S. as well, which is, I don't know where it came from. Like my sister said the other day, like he is so infatuated with English royal history, Hadrian's Wall. It's I'm like this kid's like 9 years old. Where is all this coming from? But yeah, we'll be hosting, which will be great. We'll have both the soccer on and the Thanksgiving Day football games here. I got to go to Columbus on Friday morning for college game day on Saturday morning. Unfortunately, can't stay in Columbus for Ohio State Michigan, but we do get to go out to Los Angeles for USC Notre Dame, which obviously is no terrible consolation prize for having to leave Columbus early. But lots of football, lots of food, lots of family. So it should be a fun few days here as we get to the weekend.
We've been doing this podcast for, I think it's around 4 years now, and we've managed to never bring up Hadrian's Wall between myself, between myself and George, the English Scottish rivalry. And so, thank you.
I'm sorry. I was going to say I get a little unexpected there.
Someone had to open that box. Although interestingly, we had was it last year we had Wes Blankenship on, and afterwards Wes messaged me to say that. I mean, Blankenship does not sound like an English name. His lineage goes all the way back to just north of where you are, Ollie. I think it's northeast, or it's close to Lake District. So it's amazing, you know, when people start looking into this, where they inevitably come from. All I can say, Chris, is that I'm sure Los Angeles will be much warmer than it is in Columbus. So I think you've probably won.
And drier as well, which will be great.
I was actually going to ask you how the Thanksgiving holidays impact on the College Game Day schedule, but would you normally travel into the location on the Friday anyway, or does it not have much of an impact?
No. It depends on your role within the crew. Like our crew, the truck drivers and the stage folks who are responsible for getting the set and the stage to site, building the site and getting everything ready for us, they're on the road and they're going to be in Columbus on Thursday. And one of the great things about our show is that we really are a family, and we have our road family, we have our home family. So they'll get together. Tommy Marshall, who's one of our truck drivers, who you'll see him referenced quite a bit. And like they talk about the Roadkill Grill and him being a great chef. They're actually cooking up a big Thanksgiving meal for all of them to be together on Thursday. So that'll be great for them. But most other people, who maybe like the producers of the show and the on-air personalities, won't be leaving for Columbus until Friday morning. So that we are benefited. We have the benefit of spending Thanksgiving at home on Thursday with our real family. And then we get to see our road family on Friday when we get to Columbus.
Great. Well, as you know, we love College Game Day in this country. Every time I talk to someone about college football, they always talk about sitting down and watching the show on a Saturday afternoon here, and it was fantastic to see Coach Corso back last week. Yeah. That was properly. So please pass on our best wishes. That's all from us on this show. Many thanks to Chris for taking the time out to come on, given his very, very busy schedule. If you're a regular listener, you know that we have awesome guests like Chris regularly, so please subscribe, rate and review. We'll be your friends forever. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Our Twitter account's at College Chat, so please give us a follow. Thanks again to Chris and Ollie for their brilliant input. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and well, and catch you all next time.